everybody, to Health, Wealth, and Divine. My name is Jawanza. Thank you so much for tuning in, everybody. It is a beautiful, hot day where I am, and I hope you're enjoying the weather wherever you are. And we've got a very, very powerful show lined up for you this evening. You know, mental health is something that it's an issue that affects a lot of people. And oftentimes when we think of mental health, or mental health issues, mental health problems, you know, we think of somebody that is obviously mentally ill or dealing with mental issues. Sometimes you can tell. In many cases, you can tell. But in many cases, you cannot. There are a lot of people walking around here dealing with mental disorders. And we're going to talk about mental health today. And my special guest is Dr. Ruby Lathan. Dr. Lathan is a holistic health and wellness expert and an advocate for plant-based nutrition. Dr. Lathan inspires with a powerful story of recovering from thyroid cancer through alternative treatment focused on a whole foods, plant-based diet. Dr. Lathan, who holds a PhD in industrial and systems engineering and a BS in computer science, began teaching others about the benefit and the power of plant-based nutrition. She motivates others to take charge of their health and provides tools for living healthy, disease-free, and above our daily routines to experience the peace and joy of life's journey. Dr. Lathan served as nutrition policy manager and lobbyist at the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, where she led a national initiative to improve child nutrition and prevent chronic disease through emphasis on plant-based options in the National School Lunch Program. Dr. Lathan is a dynamic speaker and an educator, hosting a number of seminars, workshops, and healthful vegan cooking demonstrations. Dr. Lathan is a health and wellness contributing writer for African American Lifestyle magazine and host of an alternative health webcast, Health 365, and the Whole Foods vegan cooking show, The Veggie Chef. So, as you can tell by her bio, that she's got a wealth of experience, and I want to get to my guest. I think this is her. Let me check it out. Let's
see. How are you?
Hi, Dr. Lathan. How are you?
I'm excellent, excellent. Always happy to be here.
Always a pleasure to have you. It's always an honor. I know that my listeners are going to be in for a treat, because the information that you always bring is always on time, it's always concise, and you have a way of inspiring and just, you know, motivating people to take charge of their lives. And I know that tonight's show is going to be a very, very important one, talking about mental health. Wow. You know, May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and so we're going to focus on that this afternoon. As I was mentioning, that there are so many people that are walking around here with, you know, mental disorders. Oftentimes when people think of people that are suffering from whatever mental disorder they're suffering from, an image comes to mind, you know, of somebody that's noticeably dealing with something, whether it's, you know, retardation or something. But there are a lot of people that are walking around holding down 9-to-5 jobs, functioning in society, that are dealing with a lot of different issues. And so with it being May and Mental Health Awareness Month, we're going to focus on mental health and ways in which we can, things that we can do to take charge, that we can enhance our own mental health by, whether it's through nutrition, whether it's through getting counseling. I mean, the mind, as they say, is a terrible thing to waste. We oftentimes view holistic health from the standpoint of just dealing with the physical body, the organs, the heart, you know, and different things. But the brain is, I mean, when the brain stops, everything else is going to stop too. So, Dr. Lathan, as we move into the discussion on mental health, first of all, if you could name just even some of the types of mental health disorders that we could tackle tonight and talk about in ways in which we can even eradicate and alleviate those conditions nutritionally.
Well, sure. I mean, the most common one that comes to mind would be depression. And that one is often overlooked quite a bit. I was just reading an article this week that was talking about particularly depression in Black women and how it's growing, and partially is because we have the idea of the strong Black woman handling everything, taking care of everybody, doing it all. And that is the case in some instances, but that actually is taking its toll emotionally and mentally on a lot of people. And I would imagine this isn't just, just for Black women. It's any woman who's taken on, or any person who's taken on, quite a bit of responsibility without taking care of themselves. And so it tends to be that for Black women, it's an epidemic proportions of depression because we've been taking care of everybody else except ourselves. And, you know, we have that stereotype of just being able to do it all and needing no one when we all need someone. And so that's growing. And it's something that we need to pay attention to, because left untreated, done about it, it gets worse. Just like any other disease, it gets worse progressively until it can end in, you know, ultimate conditions like suicide and other things. So we really have to, you know, start with some of the basics, because depression is something that, sure, you can have a predisposition for or not, but it's not necessarily that. It can be brought on by, food deficiencies, as well as emotional trauma, as well as just being drained and burned out, lack of sleep, et cetera, things like that. So that's the first one that comes to mind that we need to deal with. And then the others are things like, bipolar disorder is very common in a lot of people. There's quite a big manic depression issues. There's schizophrenia. There's paranoid schizophrenia. There's a lot of issues like that that tends to be growing. Again, some of those are affected by nutrition. Some are affected by hereditary issues. But they're all something that can be treated and that we can do something about. So those are the ones that really, come to the top of the list. And, you have things like schizophrenia, where people think that, you know, in order to have schizophrenia, you're going to be walking down the street talking to yourself and doing all kinds of crazy things. But there are levels to each of these illnesses, and it doesn't necessarily have to be that extreme. And so we can kind of let go some of those stereotypes and know that, regardless of the label, we're still people and something can be done about it.
Well, since you started off with the depression in Black women, and let's deal with that image, if we can, for a moment, about the strong,
sure.
The strong Black woman. Yes, it's true that for a very, very long time, there have been Black women that have been head of household because of an absentee father. They've done it all. They've been the mother, the father. They've been it. They've done it all, and I commend Black women for the strength that they have and have exhibited over the years, just even in this country, just being here in the United States. But now there are women who actually wear that title as a badge now. Hey, I'm a strong Black woman. I'm a strong, independent Black woman. I don't need no man. I don't need nobody, And it's even reinforced by brothers who, when they meet women, tell them, hey, I'm looking for a strong Black woman like you, So that's even reinforced by the men that they come in contact with. So they wear this badge, and then the brother reinforces, shines the badge up, by saying that that's exactly what he's looking for. So when you take that, and then a woman who ultimately mentally breaks down underneath that pressure, it poses a conflict, because in order for her to now seek help, and if the problem is rooted in her inability to let go or to be other than strong, you know, to be soft, because, you know, that's part of being a woman too. You know, that's amazing. A main part of being a woman is her femininity, you know, her softness. And so for a woman to now have to let that go, heal that strength, go, or at least some of it, or relinquish at least is probably a better word, some of it, understanding that, you know, no, you don't have to be this strong black woman, because what that's often equated to, aggressiveness. Brother, here's, for example, let's say, for example, a guy meets a woman, or a guy is introduced to a woman through his buddy. And he's like, well, tell me about her. And he's like, well, first thing he says, well, she's a strong black woman. Even though the brother might say to the sister, I'm looking for a strong black woman like you, when his buddy tells him, yeah, she's a strong black woman, that brother might interpret that as she's aggressive, you know? And so now with that, and that might be the case, that might she might come off like that. But now I guess the point I'm trying to get to is, if this strength is causing problems, if this strength in needing and or having to be this strong black woman carrying your unfair share of the weight, you know, just to ensure that the family survives, the family eats, the food on the table, there's clothes on the back or whatever, then it might be difficult, if that's all you've known, to relinquish that, or at least some of that, to someone else so that you can heal and deal with, because ultimately you're being depressed under this weight.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's all about balance, you know, that we need to take. And, you know, strength and femininity can coincide, and they do. It's really when we get to the point of putting on the shell of toughness and that we need nothing, we need no help. And the fact is, men don't do it alone. Usually when they're supporting the family, they have a helpmeet. So they're not doing it themselves, and neither are we. We need someone. So if we don't have that family structure, you know, mother, father in the home or something like that, we still need our support systems. And so instead of carrying all that weight on ourselves, we need to learn how to accept help, whether it's from, you know, friends, family, whatever, but understanding that it is, yes, you can do it alone, but there's a price that it comes along with that. And that price is really heavy. And so instead of, you know, wearing the badge and then suffering later, let's forget about the labels. Yes, we're everyone, man and woman, should be self-sufficient and independent on their own. However, that doesn't mean you don't need anyone. Being independent means you can care for your responsibilities, but it doesn't mean you don't need help to carry out day-to-day life, to care for your children, to make this work. We all need help, especially when there are other, you know, people who are depending on us. We need that help. And so making sure we have those social networks or family networks that can provide that help is very important. And if you're financially able, sometimes it's paying for that help, you know, paying for that housekeeper or whatever you need to do, you do that instead of just carrying that burden alone. You know, whatever we have to do to get the help is what really matters. And then understanding self-care and knowing that you are as important as the people you're taking care of. So you have to give yourself that mental break, that downtime, that whatever, walk in the park, if that's all you can do, silent time to yourself, you know, massage, whatever it is that helps replenish your spirit and your soul, truly replenishes it, then that's what we need to do. And I think that's part of the downfall. And a lot of times it's our thought process about it. It's feeling like we're alone. It's feeling like this is a burden. It's feeling like I have to be strong, as opposed to having a different mindset about it actually makes an emotional and mental difference. So you know, this is, you know, maybe not what some people have chosen, so they're not happy that they have to do it alone. But other people have, and so it's have chosen it. So it's really about, you know, your mental mindset about it. It's like, okay, we're here now. Let's make this work. We have a happy life. I've got a family here that is, you know, what it is right now, and we're going to make the best of it and be happy and decide to be, you know, happy and make it work, make it a happy existence. There's a lot of factors that play into it. But I think part of it is understanding the need for help, regardless of your situation, and then learning how to accept help, and then taking care of yourself to mentally and physically restore yourself. Those are the keys.
Well, what would be some warning signs that somebody, you know, can look at and say, okay, some early warning signs that somebody could look at and say, you know, hey, I need help, without denying it, without going into denial. I mean, just something as plain as the nose on your face. If you are blank, you need help, you know. Are there any early warning signs? I mean, we've got several different things to deal with, but just for depression, or even, you know, if you want to just tackle.
Absolutely. Yeah, there are a lot of warning signs before you get there. One is like almost like a chronic fatigue. Not even going as far as chronic fatigue syndrome, but there is that too. But always being tired, never feeling rested, always feeling very tired, even if sometimes when you've gotten sleep, just feeling exhausted and not being able to shake the exhaustion. Normally, when people work really hard, you know, for a period of time, you get some rest, then you're back, you know, back to yourself, and you're able to do it all over again. If your sleep and rest doesn't get you back to 100, and you're constantly at, like, let's say 60%, then that's a sign that you need help, that you need to stop and evaluate some things, being that chronic tiredness is one. Usually weight gain is can be one as well. If it's, you know, not intentional, if it seems like I have a very hard time losing weight, sometimes that can be a symptom, because if you're not sleeping enough, you tend to gain more weight, and stress related to carrying everything also tends to put weight on and makes it very difficult for it to come off. Just being a feeling of just not happy, not even in situations where you should be happy, you know, at parties or whatever, you never really feel that sense of content or happiness. That can be a sign of depression or leading up to it. So you're probably going to need some help, and just never having a moment to yourself ever where you're, every hour is scheduled that you have to be doing something, and usually for someone else, whether it's your parent that you're caretaking, you know, because oftentimes we're taking care of not just our children, but our parents or other people's children too. And then we have church responsibilities, and we have this responsibility, and we're taking all of that on. And so if you're so scheduled and so busy that you have no time for yourself, then that's also a sign that things are getting out of hand or are out of hand, and that you need to step back for a minute and look at, you know, ways to carve that time out. So, you know, just being, let's say, you know, short-tempered, agitated, those type of things are also signs of just a lot of different things, from stress to lack of sleep. And then not getting enough sleep, if you never get enough sleep, that's usually going to lead up to some type of illness, one of which being depression.
Well, what about people who actually might put, just put a whole bunch of stuff on their plate so that, I mean, unconsciously, intentionally, if that's something, you know, they unconsciously, intentionally load up their plate so that they have all of these things to do, so that they won't have time to be alone because they can't stand being alone. I mean, underneath all of it, they really can't stand being alone. So without consciously being aware of it, they might load their plate up and not really know why they do it. But then oftentimes we'll tell people, I'm just so busy, I just don't have time, I just don't have any time for myself. But they're constantly putting stuff on their plate because they might not, underneath all of it, like their own company, or, you know, might, and which could be, I would assume, possibly a sign of depression if you can't stand being alone, that you have to constantly be around people. I mean, but, you know, you mentioned something about people that, you know, when they should be partying and having a good time. But what about people who just put stuff all on their plate, all constantly? I mean, and you would think that you could tell them, hey, listen, don't put any more stuff on your plate. I mean, you know, that's obviously you don't have time to do half the stuff you got on there now. But maybe unconsciously they do it so that they won't have to be alone with themselves.
Yeah, that does happen. I mean, a lot of people aren't comfortable with being by themselves or being alone. And that can be an issue for sure, to understand why. You want to look at that, you know, what the problem is, because ultimately we have to be happy with ourselves in order to be happy in any type of interaction with other people. So if we're not happy with ourselves, then we will tend to do things like that, overschedule and overcommit. And then that over time, if, you know, again, if you're not taking that rest that you need, then that's, you know, that's a problem. I mean, some people love being around people a lot, so they just like surrounding themselves with people, and they don't necessarily like being by themselves. Doesn't mean they're not happy people. But if you're doing things to just avoid yourself because you're not content with yourself, then that's another situation that, you know, we have to look at. And that overcommitment, sometimes you're just avoiding dealing with issues that you might need to address. And generally, you know, hopefully you're doing something positive with that time, but that still doesn't avoid, you know, burnout and things like that at the end of the day that then ultimately can lead to depression.
Well, doctor, let's take one which is in the, I'd probably say the last 10 years or so, maybe 15, but I'd say probably around 10 in the Black community, it's become even a word that people throw around loosely without really knowing what this term really means. And that's the word bipolar. I mean, if people, Black person is quick to call somebody else bipolar in a minute, you know what I mean? Oh, that joke is bipolar.
Mm-hmm.
She's bipolar, man. I was dating this girl, man. She was bipolar, you know. And she might not have been bipolar. I mean, not from the clinical
right.
diagnosis of that. But it's a word that's used a lot. And but if we could talk about what is actual, you know, someone being bipolar, what does that actually mean? Because there are a lot of people out here that might be dealing with being, you know, that condition. And, you know, maybe we could talk about even ways in which, if somebody has been diagnosed as being bipolar, ways that they can address that from a holistic standpoint to help to deal with that.
Right. Well, there's, you know, it is a real condition. We do use words like schizophrenic, bipolar, and crazy pretty loosely. But, you know, they are real conditions, and they really do affect a lot of people. So it's basically characterized by, you know, extreme mood swings, like from depression to what they call mania, or being very happy, or on the other end of the spectrum, just very excited, very extreme with whatever it is you're doing. So it can go from, you know, wanting to just be alone and be in the house to next week wanting to go on shopping sprees and just being exuberant and overly excited and happy. And so usually it's the swings, those type of what they call manic depressive swings,
mm-hmm.
are what characterize true bipolar. So you know it from the extreme. And so a lot of people do have personalities like that where, you know, they get upset very quickly. One minute they're happy, next minute they're upset. That's not necessarily bipolar. Sometimes that is manipulation or just other emotional issues that can be dealt with, but it wouldn't be, you know, clinically shown as bipolar. It just depends on how extreme it is and how often it is. So so those are going to be the symptoms. And then, you know, there's a treatment for it, you know, ranges from, you know, medication to certain behavior therapy that people use as well. So cognitive behavior therapy is something that has also been useful in treating it in addition to medication. That's the traditional treatment. But when we look at things, it's a very holistic set of our body. It's very holistic. So just like other things are caused by nutritional deficiencies, mental illness can be exacerbated or made worse by nutritional deficiencies and sometimes caused by it as well. So traditionally, the nutritional aspect is not used unless it's a holistic type of physician or someone who's treating the person. But there are lots of things that can be done nutritionally to help improve depression and bipolar. For example, vitamin D has been shown to be very effective. I mean, it's called the sunshine vitamin for a reason, because it makes us happy and things like that. So when we're usually out in the sun, you tend to have a little bit less depression because you're getting not only just the nice sunshine, but you're getting that vitamin D hormone, which affects everything from our brain to the way that our organs work. So vitamin D deficiency is often an issue. Vitamin B deficiencies are often common in depression as well as bipolar. Sometimes vitamin C as well. So there are a number of we want to start there, usually with looking at potential deficiencies that we know are linked to, you know, mental illness that make them worse and makes it very difficult to cure if those deficiencies remain. Now, you can treat it with your medications, but the treatment is not a cure. So we really want to focus on, obviously, cures, and you would need to look at the nutrition. And then, obviously, you know, there are other things that contribute to it, like high-fat foods, junk food, things that feel good going down for a moment, but then later actually cause more depression and worsen things like bipolar and other things like that. The sugar, highly sugared food, processed sugar, will make episodes worse, can trigger it, will make depression worse and things like that. So the diet is huge when it comes to mental illness. So bipolar, you're going to know it. You know, a lot of people are undiagnosed because sometimes it's not as extreme, but as it gets worse, it is. And then an issue that often happens is that when people start feeling better from taking the medication, they want to stop taking the medication, and then that usually causes another episode, which really highlights the need for a cure as opposed to a lifelong medication.
Mm-hmm. You know, I want to approach this from a, you know, very sensitively, because I know that there are people out there that might be tuned in or know somebody that will ultimately tune in and, you know, listen to the show. And this is stuff that is real in their life. Their days might be filled with, you know, having to deal with either a child, you know, that's bipolar. And I had a friend once who had a daughter who was actually going through, self-mutilation. I mean, she said her daughter would cut us. You know what I mean? I mean, and so, I mean, that's some serious stuff. I mean, and her days were spent, you know, wondering, you know, if her daughter was okay. I mean, so, you know, when we talk about bipolar and you know, things dealing with the mind, it's very, you know, it's tricky. I also had a friend of mine who had a brother who the brother was, I don't know what he was diagnosed with, but I mean, everybody, you know, just, you know, they used the word slow, you know, they said he was slow. I do know he was a habitual liar, but he was also, he'd gone to special education school or whatever. And his mother was always extremely angry with him. You know, now I know that she had to know that there was obviously, you know, the young boy was dealing with some sort of mental issue, but you could tell that she was angry at him, that she may have viewed him as an embarrassment and, you know, that sort of thing. And although he couldn't help it, I mean, it was obviously something that was going on in the brain. And, you know, I don't know if the mother really understood what was going on with her son. So just even from the standpoint, is there any advice that you could give to a parent that might be dealing with a situation where they have either a young man or a young woman, a child, even, you know, just somebody in their family or a child that they have to care for that has exhibited behavior that might, the medical system might say warrants medication, and just how can the parent deal with their own issues of, you know, that's my child? Because I think a lot of times people internalize that, like the lady that I mentioned that had the daughter who was self-mutilating herself, she felt it was her fault, you know, because she gave birth to the child, you know. She felt that there was something wrong with her to have had a child that was born with that condition. So is there any advice that you could give to parents who are dealing, they might be listening to this show, that might have a child that has behavior has gotten to the point where they've actually been clinically diagnosed with something that they're now being prescribed medication for because it could be a mental thing? Any advice for parents that have to deal with that and ways, and how do you deal with, let's say, if that young person is of an age where you can't tell them what to eat? You know, you can't say, you know, listen, we're going to eat this, and you can approach the treatment from a holistic perspective, but that person now is old enough to eat whatever they want and make whatever choices that they, you know, are going to make, but yet they are taking doctor's medication.
Well, I just want to start with the first part. You know, with children, I mean, anger is never the appropriate response when you're dealing with someone necessarily with a mental illness. We have to, you know, it's probably a natural response because you're frustrated. And it's hard to deal with. And so you really do need that extra time to yourself when you're dealing with a child or someone who you're living with who has mental illness. You really have to take care of yourself because it is very taxing. So number one, you've got to build in some time that you can get away and have some peace. Two, you do have to let go of the blame for that you're blaming yourself and blaming the child, because it doesn't serve anybody to blame. It's pointless. So you have to let go of the blame, which helps you let go of the anger. A lot of times that anger is coming from a place of really blame and being angry with yourself. And so then you're kind of spewing it out on the child or someone else. And so when you let go of that guilt or blame or whatever it is, and anger for yourself, then you can release that, because it intensifies the situation. People can feel your anger before you even say anything, and that energy that's put out there, it just comes right back to you. So you're talking to a child or a person in anger, you're just going to get that same angry energy back in one way or another, and it just makes the situation worse. So really, I know that sounds simple, but you know, you really do have to let go of the anger and come at it from a compassionate standpoint of, you know, that they're not, you're not dealing with yourself. You're not dealing with someone who's thinking like you and thinking in the same logical format that you are. So your anger really makes no sense. You know, it's like if they're not getting it, they're not getting it. It doesn't make, it doesn't even make sense for you to be angry for someone who's not comprehending or dealing with things in the same way that you are. So that's number one. You have to come from compassion and understand, okay, they're not necessarily the way I think they should be, so I need to step back and relax. And this is part of the self-care, because when you keep going and going and going and you have no time for yourself, you're just constantly angry and on edge anyway. And so then when people, the littlest thing goes wrong, you blow up. And so, and that goes doubly for when you're dealing with a child who's difficult in whatever way. So this is why you have parents that you know, that are just on edge all the time, because they never get that time to release that pressure and replenish. So they're always edgy. They're always mad. And that's a terrible state to be in, because you just actually, your role now in that is making it worse. So with children, you know, if you have control, if they're like under, you know, 12, 14, you should be controlling their diet and giving them the best that you can from, you know, a standpoint. Things like omega-3 fatty acids are going to be very important if we're talking about healing the brain. Just like it heals our gut and other parts of our body, omega-3 fatty acids help heal the brain in the form of the DHA or DHEA supplements that you can take when you're dealing with mental illness. You want to take it in food form, but you also want to take it in higher doses in supplement form to help fill in the nutritional deficiencies. So that's things like chia seeds, hemp seeds, flax seeds, walnuts, flaxseed oil, hemp seed oil, taking like 2 tablespoons a day of those oils, or 3 tablespoons of the seeds combined. It's going to be a starting point. So then in addition to that, you would want to take the supplements to help with that as well. You know, with adults or people that you don't have control over what they eat, you know, that's a difficult situation. And sometimes you have to, you know, just, I don't know whether, it depends on what the situation is, how far you can step back and disengage, or how much control you actually do have over it. If they're living in your house, but they're old enough to eat what they want, then you just don't have it in the house. You have what they need in the house, and you explain to them that, you know, potentially you could get off of this medication, potentially, maybe, in some cases, if you change the diet. And the person who's dealing with it generally does want to be well and get well, and so that would be an option for them. So it just, it depends on the situation.
You know, it's got to be very, very trying for a parent that has a situation like that, because let's say, for example, if when they give the medication, let's say the doctor said, okay, let's say the child is prone to anger or, you know, whatever behavior, again, that warrants some sort of medication, at least in the eyes of the medical establishment, and then you give the medication to the child, and the child they slow down, but they're not, let's say they're not themselves. You know, and, you know, for the parent, I guess the parent has got to say, well, what's the lesser of two evils? You know, is if I don't prescribe the medication to the child might hurt themselves, or, you know, run around, I guess, whatever, displaying whatever behavior, you know, anger or whatever. If I do give the medication to the child, especially now if they're listening to a show like this and they know about, you know, the side effects of allopathic medication, they know that, as a result of giving this child this medication, that there could be some sort of long-term repercussions behind this, which then they'll blame themselves for, because they knew, but they just didn't know how to keep the child and, you know, I guess the behavior under control. So I guess that would lead me to this question. Is conditions like that, mental issues, can they be hereditary? I mean, can somebody pass it down? And this is not, because if your answer is yes, this is not to, so for any parent to fault themselves if the answer to this question is yes. Don't, you know, don't beat yourself up if the answer is yes. Okay, so we can talk about that. But is it hereditary, Doc? Can mental illness be passed down from a parent to a child?
There are some hereditary components to mental illness, just like there are to a lot of illnesses. We call it predisposition to those illnesses. So, yes, and there's no need to blame yourself because there's nothing you can do about that. If you pass the gene down or something, but it still doesn't mean that it's not treatable naturally. It doesn't mean that. So if you decide you're going to go the natural route with mental illness, you need, just like with any other illness like cancer or diabetes, you need to be working with a holistic person who's equipped to tell you and guide you on what needs to happen, because it's not just a simple, oh, we'll drink a few juices and go vegetarian or vegan. You need to, there's specific supplements in large doses that need to happen in order to help remedy and heal the brain. So just like you go to an allopathic doctor to get these, medications, you need to go with a naturopathic doctor or someone who knows how to treat that naturally and work with them. And then you're not alone, and it's not all on your shoulders to think of every little thing. So especially when you're dealing with high dose multivitamins and vitamins that you'll probably need for a while to help fill in the gaps and the deficiencies, you really want to work with someone on that. So, do what you know until you can find out what to do differently. And to know that there is help out there.
Well, doctor, what about manic depressive? What is that? People have heard the term. What's the difference between somebody that has been just diagnosed as being depressed or, maybe even bipolar, and a manic depressive individual?
Oh, the difference between depressed and manic depression?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, one is, when we think of depression, it's basically kind of being melancholy, sad, wanting to be alone, sleeping a lot, maybe eating a lot or not eating at all, those type of things. Kind of manic depression takes on a little bit more of an extreme scenario where you're, where it's not what we would consider, typical depression. You might do larger, bigger things, where people might think that's a cry for help or something, and in a way it is. But it's usually more extreme, like I'm not leaving the house at all, where someone who's depressed is going to have trouble leaving the house. They're going to drag themselves out. Manic depression is, I'm just going to barricade myself here. Where it seems more unreasonable to us, those type of behaviors. So it's more extreme behavior that when you're looking at manic depression, and it lasts longer, and it's more of an episode as opposed to sometimes a chronic state.
Would it be, the episode be precipitated by somebody not taking their medication? Could that bring on the episode?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, that could. I mean, that happens often because, like I said, people start feeling better and they stop taking. And it takes a while for that to wear off, the medication to wear off. And then by then, the imbalances that are created by not having that medication then come back. And then it triggers usually like an episode or something, or that's how other people know that the person hasn't been taking their medication, when the episode hits.
Well, doctor, we've got a few minutes left. I want to talk just to cover another one real quick, schizophrenia. And the reason I picked that one is because I knew a person one time who appeared to have it all together. I mean, the young lady had did a couple of years of college, was talented, could sing, could draw.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, was going to school for art and, all of that. And then we lost contact for a while. And, several times I just you know, she crossed my mind, and I wonder whatever happened to so-and-so. Wonder how so-and-so is doing. And in my mind, I pictured this person to be doing quite well. I pictured them to be an executive in some company or something, you know, because of, based upon the time that I had seen her last and, you know, the times that a few years, 7 years had gone by or something, and I was like, okay, she's probably, you know, doing quite well as an executive in the art world or something. But then one day, I was on a bus, and it was January, and it was freezing cold, and the heat didn't work on the bus. And so we stopped at a bus stop, and there were people getting on the bus, but there was this one person that was just the last person on the bus, and I was just, you know, was wondering, what is this person taking so long to get on this bus? It is cold. Please get on this bus so that we can go. And so as I'm sitting there, I just happened to glance up just to see who was this last person that was holding up the bus, because I'm sitting up there with icicles about to fall off my nose. And this homeless person with all these bags got on the bus and, I mean, had a hood over their head and everything. I mean, just looked like a typical homeless individual. And as they walked past, I glanced up and I looked and I was thinking to myself, that looks like so-and-so. Then I thought to myself, nah, it's no way. It couldn't be. Then I turned back around in my seat. Then I turned back around again and I looked and I was like, I'm telling you, it looks like so-and-so. So I got up, and I went back and sat across from the person and said, excuse me, miss, is your name so-and-so? And she looked at me and said, Jawanza? And I was like, oh, my God. Went and got her some coffee. You know, long story short, went and got her some coffee and sat and talked or whatever, asked her what happened or whatever. She said the doctors had diagnosed her as being schizophrenic. And I was like, whoa, you know, because I had no idea. There was nothing that those years earlier would have led you to believe that this individual was anything other than sane. You know, I mean, again, had been doing college. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was, you know, the whole bit. So with schizophrenia, I mean, is that something that is detected in childhood? Obviously, it wasn't in her case. But is that something that creeps up on you, or what? Something had to
There are some things that usually happen with schizophrenia. It's not, I mean, sometimes a lot of with schizophrenia is things, traumatic events might happen early on in childhood, something that would trigger like a PTSD type of a syndrome. So the common markers are usually, you know, something traumatic may have happened early childhood or early, you know, youth, you know, teen years. Usually the other markers, the people are very intelligent often, very logical, analytical. And then it usually hits in the mid to late 30s, if it is going to occur. It could hit any time, but it happens usually, the onset happens there. And often it's with single people who don't have a support network that happens. It's not, we're just going in with averages. It's not everybody's case, but I'm saying a lot of it is marked by that. And so you have people who, you know, will have gone through a traumatic event and then maybe stress and pressure builds up and it causes somewhat like a breakdown. And that's when the you know, schizophrenia starts. And so there are lots of types, you know, from the paranoid schizophrenia where you're thinking the person looks like to be functioning normally, but they suddenly think everyone is, you know, watching them, or there's government conspiracies against them. And then that generally causes them to withdraw and then end up losing jobs and end up homeless because now they're not trusting anyone, especially if they don't have a strong support network. Before that, if they were kind of on their own, single like that, it tends to happen more often when in that scenario, whereas when you have very strong family bonds, a lot of loving support, it tends to keep it at bay to a degree. So, and then there's, you know, still the nutritional deficiencies, vitamin deficiencies and other things that come into play as well. So sometimes a traumatic event triggers it. Sometimes it's a past traumatic event that is kind of sitting out there that hasn't been addressed, and then later in life a stress comes on, it can trigger it as well. So usually that's been some of the markers, is, you know, past trauma maybe that hasn't been treated and then kind of being a loner, and then stress, and then there's usually some type of a break that happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, basically we call it like a break from reality as we know it, meaning, you know, you think people are watching you or something's going on and everybody's in a conspiracy against you. And it makes it very difficult for those people to get help because they're thinking, you know, there's a conspiracy. So you have to be very patient. And when someone has acknowledged that they have it, then, you know, we need to get away from the joking stereotypes about it because it is a very serious condition, but it can be treated and it can be remedied just like other conditions in the body. So if we stop looking at mental illness as something so off kilter that can never be cured, maybe we could get rid of some of the stigma behind it. Because I know people who won't get treatment just because they don't want the label. I was like, well, you know, you don't want the label because you won't be able to get a job, but you don't have a job now because you won't get treatment. So it's like there's a circle going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to get rid of the stigma and just say, let's treat, you know, let's treat people and heal this just like anything else.
So what advice would you give in the closing moments to people that have a choice to make? And that choice is, for example, they've heard this show and they're like, you know what, I'm tired of taking this medication. You know, I want to get healed holistically, or a parent that has a child that they want to get off the medication. They're tired of, you know, the bouts with depression. Let's say it's a manic depressive situation, or even a just, I don't know if the word is regular depressive or bipolar situation.
Mm-hmm.
Should they, if they're going to go the holistic route, because we're here to say that you can treat depressive and manic depressiveness, just bipolarism, and just Alzheimer's and schizophrenia. You can treat these conditions holistically. But if people are actually taking medication for these conditions and they want to get off, you know, they really need a plan to do so. So any advice before we give your information? Because, first of all, if you want some advice, call Dr. Latham. But, yeah, go ahead, Doc.
Sure. I think you want to work with, as I mentioned, kind of someone who's worked with people like this in the past, a naturopathic physician, a physician who practices functional medicine. People, there are a lot of natural, and there's a lot of books about this, about, you know, healing the brain, you know, starting with, you know, omega-3s and healthy foods. So you want to get on a healthy, unrefined diet, number one. Get rid of all the processed food, meat, dairy products, and go to a plant-based whole food diet. That's going to help. You're going to want to exercise regularly, and you're going to want to absolutely work with a naturopathic physician or a functional medicine person, someone who can help you here, nutrition, to really approach this completely. Don't just think, you know, I'm just going to start eating healthy and it's all going to go away. You need a little bit more than that. And especially if you're going to be tapering off the medication, you want to work with someone who can help you do that so that you don't spiral while you're trying to get well.
You know, doctor, we're going to have to do a part two to this because there's so many other disorders out there. I mean, you've got anxiety disorder, dementia, attention deficit disorder, autism, I mean, post-traumatic stress syndrome. I mean, there's so many different mental conditions that people are dealing with, and we just touched on a couple today, so I just hope that the information that we did give today, the information that Dr. Latham shared, was beneficial to those people that are dealing with any of the conditions. We talked briefly about manic depressive, yes, and schizophrenia,
mm-hmm.
So we have to do a part two to talk about some of the others, you know, but, you know, just we want people to know that there's help, there are answers, because like Dr. Latham said, if you can get it, you can unget it. And there have been people that have actually treated their conditions holistically. And, you know, again, a lot of it, a large part of it is nutritional, correct, Doc?
Absolutely. It's nutritional and it's lifestyle. And the cognitive behavior therapy really does work as well. It shows you how to retrain your brain and stop the thought processes that cause you to spiral. So it works very well for depression. It even works for bipolar and schizophrenia. So there are things you can do to help yourself.
Doctor, can you give your information for people that want to get in contact with you? They might have somebody in their family, or they themselves might be dealing with some sort of either depression or some sort of anxiety or some situation that they know that they really need help for, and they're tired of taking the medications or tired of giving the medication to their children, and they'd like more information on how they can address their condition holistically. How can they get in contact with you for more information?
Sure, they can reach me at 202-709-7829, or you can go to my website, rubylathan.com, and there you can email me, or you can look at recipes and things like that as well. So that's rubylathon.com.
Dr. Lathan, thank you, thank you, thank you so much. Again, everybody, Dr. Lathan is a regular on Juwanza for Life. She comes on normally every third Thursday of the month. So mark your calendars, stick it on the refrigerator so that you know every third Thursday from 7 to 8, you know where to be right here with us, talking about another aspect of holistic health. And I want you to share this information, everybody. Share it with your friends. Everybody knows somebody that has somebody in their family that is dealing with something, and it's mental. And again, I want to be very sensitive about this because it's real to a lot of people. It's not funny, you know, it's very, very serious, and everybody knows somebody that can benefit from a holistic approach to treating mental condition. Oftentimes when we talk about holistic health, we're dealing with it from, you know, we talk about healing cancer and diabetes and arthritis, and all of those things are real as well, but we definitely need to take a lot of time to devote to the mind and the brain because, again, these are conditions that are affecting a lot of people that we love, a lot of people that we know, and, you know, we're going to give it the same amount of attention that we give the other shows to. So, Dr. Lathan, I want to thank you, thank you, thank you for being my guest. As always, you bring a wealth of information to the table, and we're always the better and more educated after listening to you. Can we do a part two on the mental condition next time?
Absolutely. Wonderful. We can. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much.
Okay,
I'll be
thank
in touch.
You for having me. Absolutely.
I look forward to the next one. Take care.
Okay. Take care.
That was Dr. Lathan, everybody. Oh, my God. She's a regular on Juwanza for Life again every third Thursday of the month. You can catch Dr. Lathan on this show. She brings a wealth of information. You got to hear her testimony. She actually cured herself of thyroid cancer. The doctors had told her that she had thyroid cancer and wanted to remove it, and she took matters into her own hands and said, no, I'm going to try another route, and they kind of laughed at her when she mentioned that she was going to go holistic, and in the end, she was laughing at them when approximately a year later, they had to come back and tell her that the cancer was gone. That's right. It was gone. And her testimony can be your testimony, too. It might not be thyroid cancer for you. It could be breast cancer. That can be your testimony. It can be gone. It could be colon cancer. That could be your testimony. It can be gone. Okay? It could be prostate cancer. It can be gone. It could be liver cancer, okay? It can be gone. Whatever it is that you have, it can be gone. You can get rid of it. You can get rid of it. You can get rid of it. And when I say get rid of it, I mean get rid of it. I don't mean remission. You know, sometimes people talk about stuff who's gone into remission. I'm talking about get rid of it like you never had it. That's right. Because think about it. If there's not an answer to every question under the sun, okay? If there's not a holistic answer to every disease, if there is a disease out here that cannot be cured, okay, then that means that God's not great, okay? That God's not all-powerful, that God's not all-knowing, okay? So we reject that, right? We know that God's all-powerful. We know that God's all-knowing. We know that God's omnipotent. So therefore, if there is anything that you or somebody that you know is dealing with, if they're dealing with it, then there has to be an answer for it. And we believe that by changing your diet to a live it and making whatever other lifestyle changes that need to be made, then you too can have a testimony like Dr. Lathan. You can go back to the doctor, and the doctor can tell you your cancer is gone. You can have a testimony like Brother Coy Dunstan, who's a regular on Juwanza for Life, who cured his mother of cancer in both breasts, her liver, and her colon. That can be your testimony too, okay? So keep tuning in. And remember, your health is your wealth. Thank you so much for your time. I certainly appreciate you. You could be doing something else, but you've decided to spend time with me and my special guest, Dr. Ruby Lathan. I appreciate you so much. Thank you for tuning in. I love you too. Peace.